CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, Owl City with Fireflies. CliffCentral.com, 4 minutes after seven. Coronavirus is all in the news. It's all anyone's talking about at the moment. We had the president address the nation last night and say that, you know, travel's more or less banned. There are certain exceptions to that rule, but from Wednesday, we will not be taking people into South Africa from especially high-risk areas. I believe domestic travel is also limited in some respects. But for most of us, it just means look after yourself, do the right thing, try not to spread the virus. Most important thing here is, even if we all end up getting it, let's try to get it in the longest period of time possible so they can develop some kind of vaccine. So we give the scientists and medical personnel a bit of a runway here, and that's, we don't clog up every hospital bed. And we only have so many beds, so I think that's very sensible.
Curbing the arch.
The arc. What do they call it? They're flattening the
curve.
Flattening the curve.
There we go.
Curbing the arch, flattening the curve.
They say
smoothing the titty, whatever you want to call it.
I don't think I heard that.
You didn't say smoothing out the titty?
No, as analysts were discussing, I didn't hear that.
They say somewhere in the middle of 2021, there might be a vaccine.
Wow, Jesus.
2021?
Right. Yeah.
Well, there's some people who are looking at this whole thing and saying, look, silver lining, there's got to be some good from all of this. And one of them is a woman I mentioned last week on the show because I was in a meeting with somebody and they told me about her. She was apparently at Design Indaba this year. Her name is Lee Edelquirt. She says the following. She says that this coronavirus epidemic will lead to a global recession, but will eventually allow humanity to reset its values. And she says that this virus could cause a quarantine of consumption and will have a profound cultural and economic impact. People would have to get used to living with fewer possessions and traveling less. And she said that might not be a bad thing. And I actually spoke to someone on Saturday who kind of agrees with this. They say, well, you know what? We spend our lives chasing material wealth. We have too much in our houses. We have too much in our pantries. We have too much in our lives that we don't need. It's like we're compulsively just aggregating and gathering stuff.
Mm.
And this woman says, you need less. She says, it seems we're massively entering a quarantine of consumption where we'll all learn how to be happy with just a simple dress, rediscovering old favorites we own, reading a forgotten book, cooking up a storm to make life beautiful. I know which dress I would like to use.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I have one.
The frock with the frills at the bottom.
Yes, that's the one, a sundress.
Oh, beautiful.
My favorite one.
Sentimental value.
She says the recent pictures of the air above China showed how 2 months without production cleared the skies and allowed people to breathe again. And apparently that's true for Italy too. Air pollution is at an all-time low.
Yep, absolutely. These satellite images are showing exactly that. And you can see a lot of Europe is actually affected by it as well, affected in a good way. Obviously because of the nationwide lockdown, which has resulted in a decline of public transport and even your own transport, and nitrogen dioxide is reduced, it's you can actually see it from space.
It's amazing.
That's the reduction in emissions effect that you can see.
Look, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these people who believes that the solution to world poverty or any of that stuff is to shut down industry. I think that growth and economic growth are the only reason that so many people in the world are now out of poverty, right? And I think that continues to be our best argument for improving the lives of people all over the earth. But having said that, I do understand that there are possible benefits to this too, which we may not even be aware of yet.
Yeah, like that slice of oxygen and ozone above Italy is finally having some fresh air.
Oh, well, being allowed to repair itself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's probably some benefit in all of this. We just don't know what it is yet. And I think in the meantime, we mustn't be dismissive of what the potential benefits of quarantining ourselves a little bit and being less consumptive might actually be.
Even if it's a mild lesson of just everyone being cleaner.
being cleaner and being nicer to each other and trying to
freaks.
And trying to remember your place in the cosmos. Like there are little viruses that are traveling through the air and on surfaces and in other people's bodies that can wipe you out, man.
Yeah, I think it's also so time for introspection and just resetting everything, having time with your family or your husband or your kids. Or
no, you can't do that.
No,
if
you're all in one house.
All right. The silver lining, according to a message that we've just received from Woody, is that like the snap of Thanos, this is just a slower effect of the same thing, of reducing the population, nature taking action. Let's see who will be rupture-proof. I don't know. The death rate's very small. It's not like half the people are going to die.
Yeah.
When Thanos snapped his fingers in the Avengers movies, then it took away one half of all the universe's inhabitants.
Oh. Serious.
Some people thought that was good. Anyway, there's some poems coming up. People are getting very poetic about this.
About what?
Corona? I'm with Gareth. Get guns and ammo the way that you have. That way you have what you have, and also your neighbor's loo paper and pasta when you need to.
Oh, my God.
Smart.
Well, you'll have whatever you want.
Yes, that's smart. Right. The only person who will survive is Keith Richards. Mm. If he goes, we all go, according to someone. Yeah, you want to hear some poetry?
Okay.
All right. Let me read this to you quickly.
Get my finger snaps ready.
Mm. Yeah. This is the whole thing. Yes, there is fear. Yes, there is isolation. Yes, there is sickness. But even there is death. Sorry. Yes, there is even death, but I'm a shit poet reader.
We're here for you.
But okay. They say that in Wuhan, after so many years of noise, you can hear the birds again. They say that after just a few weeks of quiet, the sky is no longer thick with fumes, but blue and gray and clear. They say that in Italy, people are singing to each other across the empty squares, keeping their windows open, so that those who are alone may hear the sounds of family around them. Oh, my God. All right. This is so bad. They say that in the west of Ireland, a young woman is spreading flyers with her number through the neighborhood so that the elders can have someone to call on. Okay, I hate this poem already. It's from Richard Hendricks.
As for the birds that they can now hear in Wuhan, in Johannesburg, we have hardy-dars.
Oh.
And you could have... You could demolish the whole of Johannesburg and you would still hear the Hardy Dars.
Absolutely.
Above it.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get into some other stories. There's not just coronavirus going around. There are other things that people want to know about. Let's start off with a story about how South Africa screwed up in 1918 with the Spanish flu, which actually did kill millions of people.
How did we screw up? We forget. The Spanish flu was obviously a worldwide pandemic. But we forget that we were heavily involved as South Africans. It was one of the five worst hit parts of the world.
Yeah.
About 300,000 South Africans died within 6 weeks.
300,000?
Yeah.
Yo.
Within 6 weeks.
Yo, if that happened today, we would be in panic.
Ooh, mother of mercy.
Yeah, so 102 years ago, that represented 6% of the entire population. So we forget what we've been through before.
So how did we screw it up?
Because not so much that this part was our fault, but it was the steamship era. So international travel was very different. However, towards the end of World War II, in September 1918, two troop ships arrived in Cape Town from England, carrying over 2,000 South African Labour Corps soldiers. They were being repatriated after spending a year behind the lines on the battlefields of France and Belgium, where as non-combatants, because this was when the South African government of the day didn't allow black people to bear arms, they had provided ancillary support for the white soldiers on the front line. I mean, these are just very, very, very dark times. But the voyage included a coaling stopover in Sierra Leone, where the Spanish flu was already raging.
Uh-oh.
Within days of their departure from there, cases of Spanish flu began to appear aboard both ships. When the first of them docked in Table Bay, 13 of the soldiers were still laid up. So there were very sort of loose examinations and loose rules and very small precautionary measures which were taken at that time.
Well, people didn't even know really what was going on.
No, not at all. And you just think about what lessons we've learned through so many years of scary diseases, and that we are the most prepared we'll ever be right now.
Yeah, I think we have more information at our disposal, and mostly everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet now. There seems to have been the salient information getting through to people. And even non-medical professionals are starting to sound like they know what they're talking about because, you know, by and large, it's quite easy to understand this thing. Whether the death rate is X or Y still has to be determined. It's early days. But they say they have reduced the infection rate in China substantially. So
that's good to
hear.
Yeah.
There's a way of combating this thing, and you know exactly what we've heard we must do is what people are being told to do. So isolate yourself, social distancing, hygiene. These are the basic rules. Day number two of no sport. I found a lady sitting on the on my couch in the TV room. Apparently, she's my wife. She seems very nice. Yeah, Bulelo, is there any sport event at all in the world going on at the moment?
Well, they've just cancelled the last one that matters, which is Super Rugby.
So they've cancelled it,
yeah.
Huh?
We played here in SA, Sharks, Stormers on the weekend.
Uh-huh. Now it's done.
Yeah, now, I don't know, get a girlfriend. Yeah.
Seems like a good thing. Good
Would
reason
still
to do that. Isn't that the opposite of social distancing, though?
Well, I mean, we're still social animals.
Would it still really matter if you watched a match with just the sports teams and no one in the actual like stadium watching?
Yeah, I think...
You'd still be interested in that?
No, because... Oh. So when you're watching for the package, especially like British football...
Oh, I always watch for the package.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Where do I go from there?
Just ignore it and carry on.
Ignore it and carry on like you're a professional. Go.
That's unbelievable. No, you watch for the atmosphere, so no. Behind closed doors, cancel it, rather.
I remember years and years and years ago on 5FM, South Africans were battling with what they call big match temperament, and it was either cricket or rugby where we were underperforming.
That's still today, yeah.
Yeah, so not very different from a decade and a half ago.
Yeah.
But I remember saying to Gareth, well, apparently it's because of public pressure and they know that everyone's watching. So why don't they just play without anyone watching?
Yeah.
Mm. And now, little did I know, it would become a reality.
Yeah. So here we are. But no, they'll probably cancel the World Cup as well because they've cancelled our games in India. So, it's all coming to an end. Yeah, like I said, get a girlfriend.
Don't you think that's more a business decision than we really do care about what's happening with people's health and whatnot? I think it's more of a business thing. They won't be making as much money if they don't have people like coming in.
Yeah, I guess that's probably so the money's no longer in people coming to watch, so that's not a thing anymore. It's all about getting big television deals now. That's where it is. So which is why SABC are probably going to struggle even more. Supersport can afford everything that matters. People, stuff that you want to watch is on Supersport. It's not on SABC anymore.
Well, then people are still going to watch. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's a little silly to cancel so much.
What, 60,000 people in one stadium? No, you got to cancel.
No, if 12 people can make it onto a sports field, then carry on kicking the ball.
Yeah.
See, are you sure they're kicking the ball? Are you sure you got the right sport here?
Then carry on alley-whooping that dunk for the scrum and hit that birdie.
The problem with cricket is that if sixes are hit, there's no one in the crowd to throw back the ball.
You've got
people running into the stadiums to try and find the ball.
These are the problems. But it's also a problem when the Arsenal coach has coronavirus, right? And then a Chelsea player has coronavirus. That's a problem.
Well, I'm not missing it because I never watched sports.
Yeah,
it means zero difference in my life.
Yeah.
All right. Apparently, China's currently got its infection rate down to below 50 a day, which sounds like a lot, but it's absolutely drop in the ocean.
Those are new infections every single day.
Yeah.
So it's coming down. More people are recovering.
Yeah, since the 8th of March, under 50 a day.
China has sent over teams to Italy to help Italy deal with the crisis because Italy has now become the true epicenter.
Yeah. It's moved over.
Yeah.
Well.
And then remember that Germany, too, have offered a couple of million, 2.5 million rands worth, I think, for testing kits for South Africa.
Oh, really? The Germans?
Yeah.
That's nice of them. Thank you, Germans.
Thank you, Angela.
All the South Africans climbed onto Twitter and said, no, please don't send us the money. Just send us the testing kits. We don't know what's going to happen to the money. Just the kits.
Those are people who are looking out. Good looking out.
Oh, no.
Well, Colin Coleman will be joining us a little later on. Because Colin, we've spoken to before, he used to be the MD of Goldman Sachs in South Africa. And I'd like to speak to him a little bit about what he's been doing at Yale University. But he also went for a test over the weekend because his son's school mandates that anybody who has contact with someone who has been in one of the high-risk areas needs to go for a test. So I want to ask him about that too, find out what he can tell us about that. We'll speak about Yale. We'll speak a little bit about the economic impact of coronavirus. And we'll ask him about the test he went for so he can explain to us what they actually do. So that you can either be afraid or you can
Is it
rest,
a pinprick? Is it
rest your mind at ease?
A sample from an orifice?
we're going to find out all of that from someone who just did the test over the weekend.
Well, Google is scrambling at the moment, and this has nothing to do with the coronavirus, so you'll be very relieved.
Okay.
They're trying to catch up with Trump's website claims.
What website claims?
So on Sunday, yesterday, Donald Trump doubled down on his claim that Google's working with the government to build a nationwide website, and sorry, it is about coronavirus, to help manage coronavirus diagnosis and treatment.
I had my hopes up.
The reality check, though, however, Google was completely blindsided by Trump's announcement of any such project. He just goes out there and says stuff.
So no now prep.
They're now scrambling around to work on two different tracks, ramping up a small pilot project that partially resembles what Trump spoke of on Friday, what he made up in his head, but obviously with a much more modest scope it used to have. Now, they're also scrambling to launch an entirely new, less personalized nationwide information portal about the virus. So the service that Trump spoke about said it'll be based on a tool developed by Google's sister company, Verily, and initially will serve only the San Francisco Bay Area.
Wow.
And then only after that claim that the tool will be rolling out nationally very quickly did Google begin working on a separate national website project.
Wow.
So, yeah, just by irresponsibly standing up and not knowing the facts and saying that, he's got the whole entire company of Google working day and night to try and fulfill the fantasy.
Okay. All right, well, listen, I think a lot of people have been caught with their pants down on this one, and I think a lot of world leaders are scrambling. Apparently, he had his corona test over the weekend, too, Donald Trump, and he has turned out negative. It's the first time he isn't positive about everything. I'm not winning the coronavirus test, although I got a very high score.
Well,
that's what he's saying.
His immune system is the best in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Of course it is.
The greatest.
But on that.
Didn't this doctor say once, just before the elections, that he was the healthiest man in the world?
So debatable. But then, of course, trust conspiracy theorists who just take this and run with it, because people are saying, sure, all right, so the president has announced his results from his coronavirus test, but where is the first lady?
Uh-oh.
People are saying they haven't seen Melania since the 10th of March.
Uh-oh.
So what's going on with her? Please.
Conspiracy theories everywhere. I'm hearing more and more of them every day. All right, so there's some stories for you from the news. What else have we got going on?
Well, on
besides coronavirus, I don't want to hear any more about that.
Yeah, just quickly, if we are dispelling some fake news, I'm a little disappointed that this is fake, though, because I thought if this is real, this is amazing. From the University of Johannesburg, they actually announced this on Thursday last week. They were saying that they were rubbishing the reports that one of their students had hacked into their IT system. Did you hear about this?
No.
So supposedly there was a student by the name of Pindi who had hacked into their IT system to edit her marks by accessing the IT panel of the UJ website. And at the end, they also said that she had given herself and also 200 other students a pass in their diploma. But actually, it turns out to be fake news.
So
damn it.
Who the hell thinks up this stuff? Where does it come from?
Yeah, UJ is saying exactly that. They're saying they don't understand where this has come from. They have posted on their various social media platforms.
Fake news.
They're saying that they'll actually take legal action on the matter, saying that whoever is peddling misinformation disguised as real news has to be taken down. But at first, I just thought, yo, P- Pindile, you are a legend. Whoever you are, wherever you are, I want to know you. But yeah, you just said this is all fake news now.
Well, this is not fake news. This is obviously Julius Malema and Fikile Mbalula were getting close over the weekend. And of course, they've got a bit of an odd history. But there was a tweet from Julius himself, where he's standing next to Fikile in one of their houses, must be, saying brothers.
No, well, this is actually from quite a beautiful thing that happened yesterday afternoon. It was Black Coffee's birthday party, but he said instead of just having a celebration all about him, he says that he recognizes, and I'm paraphrasing here, he recognizes his success, and that is largely because of the support that he's had, and he just wishes that more of us could actually support one another. So he ended up inviting people not based on who he's actually friendly with, but saying who we can each learn from, and so had this gorgeous party yesterday with really some people you would never ever see in one room together, and so that's why we see a photo like Mbalula and Malema as well. But yeah, it was incredible. Okay. Yeah, the photos just from social media.
So were they at the party?
Yeah, they were all at the party together, and I think this is the best Mbalula has looked in quite a while, actually. He had a haircut.
Yeah, he looks pretty good.
Doesn't look like a grandma.
No, he does not.
Okay. He's wearing a baby blue pale suit.
Speaking of grandmas, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders debated each other over the weekend. I'm not going to say grandma, but grandpa. Listen to these two. Here's Bernie talking about the Ebola crisis that they're facing in America.
And Ebola
now.
And Joe Biden, he doesn't know what he's talking about either. Just listen to these guys.
The Ebola crisis, in my view, exposes the dysfunctionality of our healthcare system and how poorly prepared we are despite how much money that we spend. And the Ebola crisis is also, I think, exposing the cruelty and the unjustness of our economy today.
So Bernie just said Ebola crisis. It's Corona, but I mean, you could be forgiven that. He said it twice. This contest, these two guys should be on a park bench at a retirement facility eating ice cream cones. They should not be on a presidential debate stage, really. And then Joe is like, oh, come on, Bernie. You know that's not fair. We've got to keep people here even if they're sick. Making no sense at all. Between the two of them, it is just outrageous that these two are the best that they could offer up. Crazy. I mean, listen to this. Listen to what Joe says. I'm playing this for you because it's funny, not because it affects you in any way. But if one of these two men did become president, everybody goes, oh, Trump's handled this badly. He's at least lucid. Listen to these two.
We can do that. We did that. We've been through this before with the coronavirus. We've been through this before. We've been through this before with dealing with the viruses that the N1H15, as well as what happened in Africa. We can do that.
What happened in Africa?
What do you mean? Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just hilarious. This is the best they could do. Apparently, New Orleans police have cleared crowds from Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And this has caused some controversy. There's like people on loudspeakers, like police on loudspeakers saying, your actions are jeopardizing public health. All right, listen to this. This is happening in New Orleans right now. They're telling people to clear out of the street. I mean, Bourbon Street's probably the filthiest place in America. You got all these people running around there drinking themselves to a stupor.
Yeah.
It's not exactly
the home of Mardi Gras.
The home of Mardi Gras, correct. So there are places that are dumber and weirder than you think.
Oh, completely.
Seriously.
Completely. Yeah, this is changing so much.
So where are you not going? Because I've definitely decided I'm not going near a gym or a public, any sort of public building where I don't have to be, that I don't absolutely have to go and visit.
Mm.
And someone sent me a list of the places that you should avoid. Do you want to hear some of those?
Okay.
I mean, some
are
of
these types of institutions, not specific.
Yeah, the dirtiest 13 places in the context of our social life. The first one, swimming pools, especially children's swimming pools. Studies have shown that 70% of these pools contain the bacterium E. coli. So this is just for interest. It's not for corona, but it's maybe these places, you know, double up as places that are not great for you to catch a virus. Number two, restaurant menus are apparently filthy. Mm. Okay? Think about that when you grab a restaurant menu. Number three, the lemon that they put on the edge of a drink glass served in a restaurant. Apparently those are foul. So don't ask for, just say no lemon, thank you. Right? Water taps in schools, which are proven to be dirtier than toilets because toilets actually get cleaned every day, unlike the taps.
Yeah, I've heard before that one of the places in a bathroom which carries the most germs is the basin, because a mop is used to clean the toilet and the mop's rinsed in the basin.
Oh! People do that?
Apparently.
The exit door of a toilet. Studies show that one-third of men, two-thirds of women, do not wash their hands. That means women are bigger offenders than men.
That's interesting to note.
I didn't know that.
Hmm.
Shopping carts or trolleys in malls. So children should not be placed in these things if you're worried about health.
Or children.
The elevator buttons and escalator side moving hand resting... you know what I mean.
The
handrails.
And
handrail,
escalators.
Yeah, which are proven to be 100 times dirtier than toilets.
And also contain a lot of sperm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a test done.
Hotel rooms. It's been proven that the dirtiest thing in hotel rooms is the TV remote or the air conditioner remote.
Mm-hmm.
How do you like that?
Mm.
Kids' sand pits, you know? The sand pit, 36 times dirtier than a toilet, apparently. Tools used in gym sports clubs.
Mm.
Mobile phones.
Mm.
Gas stations. A petrol station in South Africa. And ironically, the dirtiest thing is paper currency. Yes, money. Money is filthy. So now you know. So somebody who we've spoken to before and someone who started a brand new career for himself after having been the MD of Goldman Sachs here in South Africa for the longest time, Colin Coleman has been our guest before. Since we last spoke to him, he's already been over at Yale lecturing and he's back in South Africa. You did a test over the weekend, didn't you?
I did it on Friday.
Oh, okay.
It was my son's school required it. I returned from New York on the 3rd of March.
And how's the test? Because most of us haven't been, and I suppose we want to know how it really feels to go through that. Is it a bit of an ordeal?
Well, the actual test is two cotton buds up your nostrils.
Oh.
And it feels like they are trying to find your brain.
Oh, no.
Go right up there?
So it's mildly unpleasant, but... it's quick and relatively painless, I would say. But the process of taking the test was quite alarming. And the reason was there was absolutely no controls. It was in the Lancet Laboratory in Morningside,
mm-hmm.
in Rochester Road. And you entered into this testing procedure only with latex gloves provided to you. So anybody, and then you would go in, and obviously that's a concentration of people who suspect that they have the virus or feel that they need to take a test for whatever reason. I was taking it because my son's school required evidence that I was negative so that he could continue to go to school.
Right.
But in that line, you had coughing, spluttering people who traveled from Austria, people who traveled from Italy, without any face masks, without any controls. And honestly, I sent messages to the authorities yesterday encouraging them, one, to provide free tests. The test was 1,400 Rand that you had to pay there.
And you said that there were some people who came to have themselves tested and when they found out how much it cost, turned away.
They turned away, which is also concerning. Two of the people that turned away were probably the most likely to have had it based on just looking at their health position. The one woman couldn't stand properly. And the other one was young and spluttering, and she said that she'd been in contact with a coronavirus positive individual. So this was very alarming, experience. One would hope that there are better controls at these points of testing.
Well, I think just judging from Cyril Ramaphosa's speech last night, it seems as if citizens and residents coming from highly infected countries will automatically be tested. And in my mind, that means free.
I must say, I firstly, just on the president, I thought, and based on all the feedback one saw on social media afterwards, the country, I think, responded extremely positively to his approach, both the substance of it and the way he delivered it. I think it really engendered a lot of confidence that they're doing the right things. I would still have hoped, for example, based on my experience, that they would think about and bring about, and perhaps they're working on that, free testing for people. But I think the people out there, the public, need to be responsible and not just go for testing without symptoms. And there will be criteria. Otherwise, you'll flood the testing centers. Correct. But I think the combination of the private sector and the government should work on a plan to try and get free testing in place and safe testing in place.
So you've been lecturing at Yale. Have they shut down the university?
Yeah. No, that again, quite concerning, and it seems to double down every day, doesn't it? So they started off by effectively suspending classes for a two-week period, as was the case with all the Ivy Leagues. Mm-hmm. There was one case of coronavirus in a student at Yale and my daughter's University, Brown, and immediately that arrangement was extended to the end of the semester. So all class teaching will happen remotely, virtually, on methodology like Zoom conferencing. Mm-hmm. So all of the teaching has been suspended, and people have been instructed to clear dormitories and not to go to class.
Sure, it's different, but it may be isn't such a bad thing after all. I mean, we will learn, I think, very quickly how much material can be sent electronically and how little people actually need to be present for these things. Obviously, the tests and the rest of it that will happen later in the semester and next semester will have, you know, a different way of approaching the material. But it's interesting that people can share this stuff in new ways.
Yeah, I think that when all of this dust has settled, and it may be some time before that happens, and maybe I can share with you so I'm thinking on that. But when the dust has settled, this is going to advance the rate at which technology is consumed.
Yeah.
Buying online, consuming online, teaching online, health online is going to be everything that people learn. And I think actually e-government services online is going to be part of that, which is one of my hobby horses I'm bringing home from
now,
Yale.
Now, how are you doing with the lecturing? Is it fun for you? Is it what you expected? Are there surprises?
So I've done 9 of 14 classes. It's been absolutely fantastic. One quarter of my class is Chinese, one quarter is US, one quarter European, and the rest African.
Okay.
And it's a great mix of incredibly bright minds who get get into Yale. And they push back. You know, one example, I speak very fondly of what's going on in Rwanda in terms of the way that they manage their economy. And they're very critical of President Kagame's background, his history, his involvement, or allegations of involvement in the genocide, and his style of management, which is very much top-down. So we're talking about modes of leadership, you know. Some concerns that some leaders are not taking decisions fast enough. Some concern that some leaders are taking it too fast, being too dictatorial. So it's very interesting having this debate, but I'm loving the process.
And what kinds of new things do you see happening in education? Because I was at Varsity, 20 years ago, so it's changed a lot. Are students different to the students you remember when you were at university?
Well, it's just I can't compare WITS with Yale because it's a very different environment. You know, you have small classes. It's postgraduate my experience, but the quality and the depth of the resources in these Ivy League institutions is phenomenal. I make a point of every week engaging with my students, but also going out for lunch with a different person from the faculty. You know, I go with 1 week with the Indian Central Bank former deputy governor, with the former Mexican president, with variety of people who used to be at the FBI, who are security operations experts, a variety of incredibly brilliant minds who all collected in this one place.
So in some way, you're also back at university.
Yeah, you know, it's very much, and I, because I'm a little bit insane myself, you know, I instead of relaxing and enjoying the time, I impose on myself things like giving public lectures. Right. So I gave a lecture on the competition between China and the United States for dominance in Africa. And it was an incredibly rigorous research piece. There was a Sunday Times summary of that speech. But it took a lot of effort to actually go into that. And I gave a public lecture on the 26th of February, which was very well covered, and which looked at the role of China and the United States in Africa.
Well, it's fortuitous that you're here today, because not only did you do a test, and very few of us have experienced that, but this coronavirus epidemic is going to have an incredible effect on the world economy. We're already seeing stock markets. We've seen people run to safe havens, if there are any such things anymore. We're seeing people scrambling and behaving in a panicked situation, and probably not making the best decisions all the way, but certainly some opportunities making themselves evident as well. Now, as someone who at Goldman Sachs was tasked with having to keep an eye on the world economy and keeping an eye on what opportunities might exist, where do you see the upshot of this first? Let's start with the silver lining, if there is any. And then how do we get back after this whole corona epidemic has sorted itself out and the dust has settled, because it will eventually, how do we get ourselves back to where we were? Because things were on the up and up.
The real question is, when are we going to be out of this woods? So I've been appointed a senior advisor to Eurasia. I've also gone on the Foschini board and taken on some various roles, but in the capacity as senior advisor to Eurasia, which is a geopolitical risk consulting group that has a bunch of experts that look at these type of scenarios. There are three scenarios that people feel. One scenario is we get through this by the end of April, looking increasingly unlikely. Mm-hmm. That scenario, we probably escape a full-on global recession. The second scenario is it peaks around July, and the view is we will definitely be in a global recession. China will have stalled from 6% growth down to anywhere between 3 and 4.5% growth. So a $17 trillion economy stalling by around 2%. The United States itself, people feel, will go down to about 1% growth. I know Goldman Sachs' forecast is 1.5% growth from 2.5%. So you're taking off a $24 trillion economy, a 1% growth rate. So for half of the world, we're slowing by, you know, those sorts of levels.
It's dramatic.
It's going to feel, from a financial and real economy point of view, very, very significant. And then there's a third scenario, which is it doesn't peak this year at all. It continues in certain places to escalate, and it doesn't peak through the year, and then we're really in unknown territory, let's just say.
Sure.
Now, let's just bear in mind that the post-global financial crisis period from 2002, if you look 2010, if you look at a graph, there's really been somewhat of a straight line upward to the 29,000 level on the S&P 500 and the Dow. And so those sorts of levels, we're only back now after coming off 20% or so plus. We're only back at 2018 levels. So there's significant amount of upside that's been built over a long extended period of time. So that froth is coming off a little bit. The question of how low it goes will depend very much on how this virus is managed, where it peaks, you know, in these time zones that I've talked about. So to the extent that things are managed well, particularly in the United States and Europe, you know, that could control a deep global recession. But to the extent it escalates in those two areas, will have tremendous impacts. China looks like they've managed to control and limit the damage in China. And I've got also evidence from people I co-invest in businesses with in China that China seems to really be taking this thing under its wing and damage controlling.
What are the opportunities in an economy like this? And a world that's a little unstable compared to perhaps how it's been for the last 10 years.
Well, you think at our own behavior, what's going to certainly happen is people are going to stay more at home. They're going to go more online. So all the telecom, communications, entertainment industry is going to move online.
Mm-hmm.
So in-person entertainment is going to die for the moment. Restaurants are going to get switched off. You know, all my Health clubs in New York have been closed down.
Travel, so tourism taking a big knock.
Very big knock. So, you know, I think anything...
Events industry is just in tatters at the moment.
Absolutely. Any technology related, any online activities, retail going online. You know, I'm on the board of Fushini, and it's very clear that, you know, the online activities, shopping malls are going to obviously take a big hit. You know, if you're in a retail property company, you would be quite concerned at this point in time. You're in restaurants, you'd be concerned. So anything that takes an online form is going to, you know, is going to escalate. So I was sort of asking somebody sort of jokingly, you know, the Zoom, for example, that people talk about doing all this video on Zoom. You know, who wears this company? You know, who owns this company? Is it listed? Because I want to buy this company, you know. Because it's obvious that, you know, people are going to escalate the use of these kind of mediums.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of the growth of the last couple of years has been due to this rampant consumerism. We've seen people already using online shopping and that kind of thing to the nth degree to order stuff in. We see panic buying now. Things like toilet paper, and I have friends in the UK who order everything, including their toilet paper.
Do you understand that phenomenon?
I don't. Do you?
Anybody can explain it to me, I'd be grateful.
I initially thought, all of the world's toilet paper must be made in China. I didn't know that.
No. I tell you what is true from living in New York for, you know, a sort of 10-week period. Everything one buys in New York, you pretty much do online.
You occasionally
go out to Whole Foods and buy things, and Amazon is so dominant. You know, so easy to buy anything you want on Amazon, and when you get your product from Amazon, 80% of that product is made in China. So you know this Trump phenomenon that we like to attack, I think, is built on some fundamental issues. So, I mean, it's true that China has effectively, you know, views the United States as its largest consumer market.
Right.
And for the United States, all the manufacturing jobs that has been lost to China, you know, that is some of the political phenomenon that we're seeing playing out with the Trump introduction of Trump to the United States. So I think that whole debate is going to have to wash out, and possibly this process is going to also shake that up.
So, Colin, I was actually going to ask you something along those lines. On a gross level, do you see an appetite worldwide from the guys at a level you get to work where we now need to move away from a China-centric production or owning those means of production, to use a Marxist term, and let's shift it back to Europe, the States? Do you see an appetite for that, or do you just foresee us, let's get through COVID and keep it as it is?
More cheap things afterwards. Yeah.
Look, I think that people are learning, you know. I mean, I was talking to somebody in an automotive factory in South Africa who was projecting the probable ceasing of automotive production, partly because of supply shocks. Mm. And those supply shocks coming from China. In other words, they haven't been able to generate, because of the shutdown in China, they haven't been able to generate product. And that focuses the mind for consumers on their concentration risks around supply. So I think multiplying supply sources of product is going to be part of the risk management of businesses going forward. Because having 100% of your supply coming from one country is
dangerous.
Obviously whatever the country is being shown to be not wise, not prudent. So I think people are going to start to say, how do we make sure that they're competitive supply arrangements that we can get from multiple portfolio of countries and suppliers. I think bottom line is these suppliers are going to have to be competitive. You can't hope people are going to move away from China if there's no other competitive supply.
And if everyone else is just way more expensive.
Yeah.
So people
are saying I think China is becoming more expensive because the cost of labor has risen in China. The cost of production has risen as it's become a wealthier society. It's natural. So, you know, that's Ethiopia, for example, is trying to position itself as a substitution opportunity for low-cost labor and low-cost manufacturing.
Can I ask you something about the South African response, not only to this whole corona thing, but how the economy is performing generally? Because I know that you do pay attention even while you're lecturing at Yale. You have lots of connections here in South Africa who keep you updated. And I'm sure that you saw Tito's budget speech, which everybody seems to have been surprised about. I'm sure you weren't. But what do you think of how the economy is performing generally? Because there is going to be a lot of blame laid at the feet of coronavirus if the economy continues to underperform. But the fact is, we already were in trouble before this.
Yeah, pre-coronavirus, we were in a technical recession.
Yeah.
Pre-coronavirus, our state-owned enterprises are not improving, with one exception, and it's an important exception. I think the appointment of Ando de Reiter as the CEO of Eskom is very important and a very positive development. I think he's bringing world-class management oversight to the institution. And I think he's bringing sober-minded approach to where Eskom should be going. So personally, I see some upside to people's general view on where Eskom is. They've got a mountain of problems, operational problems, financial problems, and other problems. But with just every day applying good management principles to these problems and hopefully getting a good board in place mm-hmm. in Eskom, because they have a lot of holes in the board at the moment. That will help strengthen the hand of Ando de Reiter there. And, you know, the combination of those issues, I see upside. But, you know, South Africa is a very small country in the overall. You know, the whole of the GDP of Africa is, you know, $2.5 trillion, or 3% of the world's GDP. We're 17% of the world's population. And South Africa is a small part of that. So, you know, it's, you know, a $350 billion economy in an $87 trillion world. It's very small. So this coronavirus shudder that's going to effectively go through our system is going to be a massive shock. There's no question, you know, China, for example, was not, I understand, buying very much iron ore in the last month. We normally export 60 million tons of iron ore to China. You know, so if they're not buying iron ore, it's lost exports. And so it's not what we do in the local economy. It's the shutters of the world trade system that is going to really impact us. Commodity prices, well, low oil price is good for South Africa, but a high exchange rate or a highly devalued exchange rate at 1630 rand to the dollar is not good for South Africa. We are going to have to bring down our interest rates. I expect the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank is going to have to respond. Saw the Fed dropped interest rates overnight. And we're going to have to see significant responses from the South African fiscal and monetary authorities.
What else can governments really do, though? Because if, for example, you know, I saw Donald Trump was talking about some kind of a payroll holiday, tax holiday for people, which essentially means they'll chop off some of the tax that you would have to pay in that month, that people may be sitting at home, trying to work from home. In some businesses, you can't work from home, but obviously everyone will try to do this. It's going to cost a fortune. Are there any ways that we in South Africa could afford to do something like that? I mean, I know that the Treasury is desperate to get money wherever it can right now.
Yeah. Look, I think it's going to start with the corporates and the businesses. It's going to be very important for businesses to carry on paying workers and employees who stay at home. And they're going to have to find ways for that to be a productive process. Mm. So I think that's going to be important. It's going to be important for the private sector health industry to come to the party on things like free testing that we've talked about. But the government is going to have to really get bang for its buck on what it's spending. And unfortunately, right now, there's not enough. So there's public sector wages, and I thought the minister was spot on in his approach. Is actually quite a light touch approach to the problem of public sector wages. What he's always talking about is managing wage inflation. He's not talking about cutting jobs. He's not talking about accountability of public servants for performance.
He can't really with the unions.
No, he can't. Well, he could, but there would be a political cost to it. But all I'm saying is I think it's a relatively light touch approach. But what we need is we need much more public sector accountability by the public sector workers. We need much more rigorous production for and bang for the buck. You know, that's the South Korean Chinese model of performance. And we need to make sure that our health education spending is very productive, which it's not. So it's going to put pressure on the system in South Africa to be much more productive. It's going to mean that there is going to have to be some pruning of expenditures in order on effectively salaries, in order to make room for productive expenditure. We're going to have to invest in our health system for sure in a whole lot of ways. It's going to have to free up from other things. You know, if government ministers are not flying to conferences anymore, as the president has banned it, that frees up money that can go into other things. But you can do that on a much more systemic basis. So that's going to be the question, is how much can the finance minister, the treasury, help to bring about a more productive mix of spending?
I love it. Mm. All right. Thank you very much. It's always nice to pick your brain. And when are you going back to the U.S., or is it undetermined at this point?
Well, I'm meant to be flying on Saturday night. Obviously, it's day by day. It's fluid. So we'll see. But Would you rather
be quarantined here or there?
Well, quarantined. You always want to be in the place that you got your loved ones around, sure. You know, so, and where you know the system. So I guess, but I have a daughter, Zoe, at Brown University, that I have to think about, and she's in New York. So either I bring her home or I go back.
Okay. Well, good luck on either front, and we're excited to hear what else you catch up with in Yale and share your info with us. It's always nice to see you. Thank you, Colin Coleman, who's returned from his time lecturing at Yale University. And that public lecture, by the way, I think we can even – some of it's bound to be online.
You can post it online.
Yeah, and there's also the article that was written on that in the Sunday Times not so long ago, China versus USA, A Battle for Africa's Future, and you can go and look for that. And Colin will hopefully rejoin us soon, and he'll also be corona-free at that point. We know for a fact that he is corona-free at the moment. He just had his test done. Right. So George Meany's on the line. Hey, George, how are you?
Good, and you, Gareth?
Good, man. You guys have quarantined your office as well, right? You've got everyone working from home.
Well, not yet. so we're working on a plan since Friday. It's very difficult for a business to go from, relying on office resources, servers, connectivity, to suddenly going to work from home. So probably by the end of the day, we'll have worked through all of those, including access to files, servers, and broadband. And then we'll more than likely be ready to shut the office down if we need to in the next day or two.
So, I mean, you and I were trying to talk on Friday, and unfortunately we couldn't get our Skype working with you. What kinds of things, because you're a CEO, this is your business, what kinds of things are you worried about with this outbreak? And then we'll get into the motoring stuff afterwards.
It's more, the social contact. So I don't think people are taking that seriously enough. So what we're trying to do is not trying to eradicate the virus. We're trying to mitigate the risk of infection and the rate of that risk of infection. So we've got partial shutdown plans that we will have by the end of the day. And then we've got a full shutdown plan. And more than likely, the full shutdown plan will be in the event that somebody is infected. If the virus numbers do escalate dramatically in the coming days, we might just implement that full shutdown plan just as a precaution anyway. So it's more about social distancing. And I think that's what everybody should focus on is don't come into contact with too many people. Try and limit the amount of contact that you have to a very small group of people and make sure it's one-on-one and at a distance. And if you follow those general kind of principles, everything else will, sort itself out when it comes to risk mitigation.
Tell us quickly about Car of the Year, because I saw that there was an event that you had 2 weeks ago now.
So car of the year is the testing days happened on the weekend, and who knows? I mean, you know, the same categories of cars are going to be tested this year, and you know, similar cars are in the running, but not exactly the same cars, obviously, because of new cars that were presented in the last year. So we've got our 21 cars, and I think we've got to just wait for the next 2 or 3 weeks before we know what's going to happen with Car of the Year.
All right, very good. But we can find all the info on autotrader.co.za.
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. What else do you have to tell us this morning?
Well, 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago now, our office was broken into.
Yeah, I mentioned this because we were, you know, it happens in South Africa. It happens to businesses all the time. Were there any people hurt? Was anything taken? How bad was it, George?
Yeah, so it was about 10 o'clock at night, and seven armed men stormed our offices. Nobody was there except the poor security guard, an unarmed security guard. They beat him up, which I don't understand. Mm. You know, why beat up an unarmed security guard? Sent him to hospital. Fortunately, he's okay and he's safe now. And they broke the trellis door off the wall. They literally took the trellis door right off the wall. You know, and if you watch the, because we've got CCTV footage, if you watch the video, of how they pull this, the security guard off the wall, it is incredibly, eye-opening that some of these security gates are relatively easy to pull out.
Sure.
So they stole hundreds of thousands of rands worth of equipment, and you know, fortunately for things like insurance companies, you know, take the biggest knock in times like this. But you know, fortunately, nobody was hurt besides the security guard, and he's okay today.
Sure. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's a horrible thing to happen to anybody, and especially you guys, because we know you so well. But everything's back to normal, right? You have insurance for anything that was stolen?
Yep, insurance is a must in this country, I think. And you know, it's we got up and running within 24 hours. So fortunately, we've got disaster recovery plans, now we're working on a disaster business operational critical plan today for Corona. And we're the kind of business who I think moves quite quickly. And,
yeah.
You know, our objective is to try and protect our staff. As an example, we're putting a big sign outside the front door of the office, no third parties, and we're calling it the Autotrader COVID-19 precautionary plan. And nobody's allowed in the front door of that office except for staff members.
All right. Well, there's lots to think about there. Are there any other stories that you want us to pay attention to this week?
Yeah, so I don't know what's going to happen with Tesla, because they've got a big China factory, but they've officially built their 1 millionth car.
Oh, wow. I saw Elon Musk tweet something about that. 1 million cars is pretty damn good.
It's pretty damn good for a new entrant into that industry.
Oh.
And then and then another interesting one, which I don't know whether it's going to be used now with the coronavirus, but Luxembourg becomes the first country to have free public transportation. So all public transport options in the country of 602,000 people, small country, is increasingly being considered by other U.S. States as well. So Luxembourg is offering free public transport. This has been tested in the past. Countries have tried free public transport, but what the data showed was that there wasn't actually an increase in the usage of fare-free public transport. This happened in the 1970s. And it only the usage only jumped by about 15%. So, is it worth having free public transport? Maybe that now that we're in 2020, it might have an effect. But in 1970, it had hardly any effect.
Right.
In South Africa, free public transport might be a big thing because of our our lack of infrastructure. So, but then who pays for that? And that's a big question.
You know, just because it's free doesn't mean someone isn't paying for it. And when we say free in this country,
exactly,
we usually mean the taxpayer is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then the BMW logo has changed. I don't know if you've noticed.
No.
So the BMW logo changed to still blue and white, but it's got white rings around it instead of the black solid band around the BMW. So it looks a lot cleaner, looks a little bit more digital. They've changed the logo now 6 times.
Jeez, okay.
In its history since 1917.
Wow, okay. I just noticed that now. I'm glad you told me because I wouldn't have even known.
Yeah.
Got rid of that
band. They got rid of the black band. If you have a look at the BMW, I don't know if anybody knows this. I don't think it's official. I think it's just something that somebody made up. But the B is above the blue of BMW.
Yes.
The M is above the middle of the blue and white.
Mm.
And the W is above the white.
Well, you know why it's blue and white, right?
Well, no, tell me.
Bavaria. The B is actually for Bavarian Motorwerke, Motorische Werke. Bavaria is the province in Germany that they're from, and the Bavarian coat of arms is blue and white. It's exactly that shape.
Oh, okay. I knew the Bavaria bit, but I didn't know the coat of arms bit. Mm. You've told me something this morning.
Yeah, bit of heraldry, even in their logo.
I've actually been to
even in their logo.
The BMW Museum there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, fascinating. Really amazing.
Well, George, that's all we got time for this morning, but we'll see you probably end of the week.
End of the week, Gareth, and keep yourself safe.
You too.
Stay away from this virus.
Yeah, we will not be doing a live we're not going to do your show this morning live, are we?
No, we're not. We're going to play a previous show, and then part of our plans today is to work out what we do with pre-recording the show, and then putting it onto the service.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us know. We will catch up with you on Friday.
Thanks, Gareth.
Brilliant stuff. There's George Meany, CEO of Auto Trader, and host of Auto Central Show, and sometimes contributed to this show on a Friday morning. We didn't get to speak to him last Friday, so we thought we'd catch up with him today. See, you can do these things technologically, provided it all works.
Mm.
And by the way, someone says, Zoom is a listed company and the stock price has doubled since the corona crisis began. See, so there's some companies that are making money. There's some companies.
I've got my aunt to start crocheting masks.
Oh, crocheting them.
Yes.
That's very good.
So they come in various colors.
Nice.
And what's...
Of course, they don't protect you.
They're very...
Because they're made out of wool.
The holiest kind.
But Leanne...
Big holes in it.
We congratulate and salute you.
Thank
on
you.
Your business
acumen. New business opportunity.
Great
business
acumen.
Thank you.
Very good. And I hope your aunt is hard at work.
It's shares.
Make sure when you type aunt in your messages, you don't let it autocorrect to...
Cunt.
Yeah. On that happy note, we will leave you for the day. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.